thank you for downloading this podcast from Guymyr Baptist Church. You can find out more about our church at our website, guymyrbaptist.org.au. May God speak to you as you listen.
The reading tonight is from Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1 to 8. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace.
A year ago, I started studying a Master's of Global Leadership at Fuller Theological Seminary in the US. And in a subject called Lifelong Development, we had a learning activity where we had to write our own epitaph. For those of you who don't know what an epitaph is or are too young to even be thinking about one, it's what is written on your gravestone. Or to put it in a millennial context, it's your last status update when you die, but generally engraved on a rock instead of social media. So as we were given this assignment, I'm thinking, gee, thanks Fuller, way to ruin the good times by focusing on death. But it's interesting because the past several years, God has taken me on quite a journey, processing what my life has been so far, where is it going, and what it all adds up to. In 10 weeks' time, I turn 40 years old. And from our culture's point of view, it's kind of a big deal. You're kind of at the halfway point of life and the halfway point of death. And time and opportunity, which seem to be in relative abundance when you're young, actually start to become a precious commodity. You can start to see that life as we know it has limits, and we can think, what have I done with my life? Have I wasted it? Have I got anything to show for it? Hashtag midlife crisis. And as I entered these places of reflection and consideration, I read more widely and found that most humans, once they kind of got past the bright, shiny distractions of life, once they stopped looking at Facebook, and once they got over themselves, were actually all grappling with the same kind of questions, regardless of what culture they came from. Questions like, who am I? What does my life mean? To whom and where do I belong? And what is my purpose? For me, it's been a time when I've started to think, what is life about and what am I living for? Nowadays, we're living in an individualistic consumer world where the life mottos are, do whatever makes you feel good, or do whatever makes you feel happy, or YOLO. And for those of you who don't know what YOLO means, it's an acronym which means you only live once, as in, do whatever you want, do it now, YOLO. And I hear these phrases getting thrown around all the time like there's some cosmic cure-all for any life circumstance. But seriously, is that a sufficient enough purpose for your life? Would that be something you want read out at your funeral or written on, as an epitaph on your gravestone? Oh, she was all about YOLO. She YOLO'd until she couldn't YOLO anymore, and she has proven YOLO. Rest in peace. Would that be a satisfactory outcome for your life? Everyone here tonight is at all different stages and seasons, but at some point, we will all take stock of our lives. Because all of our compounding thoughts and all of our cumulative decisions and our combined actions and all of our YOLO will add up to make our life. And the question is, will the sum total of all our lives add up to what you'd hoped for? Or will it be something you regret? An Australian palliative care nurse named Bonnie Ray, who nursed and cared for those in their final stages of life, asked her dying patients if they had any regrets or would they do anything with their life differently. And on hearing their reply, she started to notice the same themes over and over again. And it was so compelling and insightful that she wrote a blog, and later she wrote a book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. Now, there's an inspiring read for the holiday season. But from the voices of those people that were facing their own mortality came a profound sense of focus and clarity. And while most of us are not at that point, I think we can actually resonate with what they had to share and what they had to say. So here are the top 5 regrets that people had in their last days of their lives, with some additional comments from the nurse. Number 5, I wish I had let myself be happier. Bonnie the nurse noted, and I quote this, "This is a surprisingly common one. Many stayed stuck in old patterns and habits. They chose comfort of familiarity and fear of change and had pretending to others and themselves that they were content deep within. They longed to laugh properly and have silliness in their life again. Number 4, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. The nurse wrote, often they would not truly realise the full benefits of old friends until their dying weeks, and it was not also always possible to track them down. Many had become so caught up in their own lives that they had let golden friendships slip over the years. There were many deep regrets about not giving friendships the time and effort that they deserved. Number 3, I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. Many people suppressed their feelings in order to keep the peace with others. As a result, they settled for a mediocre existence and never became who they were truly capable of becoming. Many developed illness relating to bitterness and resentment that they carried as a result. Number 2, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. This came from every male patient that she nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Many deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of a work existence. And finally, the number 1 regret people had looking back on their lives in their last days. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. And this was the most common regret of all. When people realise that their life is almost over and they look back, it's easy to see how many dreams have gone and were unfulfilled. Most people had not honoured even half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to the choices that they had made or not made. That's some pretty heavy duty thoughts right there. And it makes you think, will that be me down the track? Will I be having those regrets, just like so many others? What makes me different from anyone else to not end up in that same circumstance, having those same regrets? Funnily enough, the book that Matt read from, the book of Ecclesiastes, was written nearly 3,000 years ago, yet echoes some of those same sentiments that we heard. It covers seasons of life, as we heard from the reading. It covers regret, emptiness, skepticism, doubt, despair, and confusion. And it's a confronting book because I think it reflects the deep humanity of us all. The author of the book is not directly identified, but from tradition and from a lot of theologians, they attribute it to Solomon. And he reflects on all the things that he has done in his life. And from today's perspective, he's kind of like a successful kind of guy. He's doing what everyone would want to do and hope to do and dream to do. And if we looked at his Facebook pages and his photos, we'd be like, yeah, this guy's got it all together. He's living the dream. He was a king. He knew power. He knew privilege. He had anything and anyone at his disposal. He spent hours devoted to learning, study, dabbling in philosophy, and knowing all there is to know. And after indulging in that, we see his reflections in chapter 1, verses 13 to 14, where he says, I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. He goes on and indulges himself in all kinds of pleasure, food, drinking, sex, relationships, and anything his heart desires. He builds houses, a mind-blowing man cave, plants vineyards, forests, orchards with irrigation. His servants, his staff can do whatever he wants them to do. He owned huge amounts of wealth and possessions. This guy was living the dream. And his reflection after experiencing all those things in chapter 2, verses 10 to 11 was this. I denied myself nothing, my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all the things that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. What this book of the Bible shows is someone investing their life intensively into a whole heap of things with the expectation that it will give life, but ultimately finding they do not. And just like that top five regrets list gives us, this book gives us a very rare gift: perspective. Perspective of those that have gone before us, and perspective of people who have faced the things that we will all face one day. But the difference with the book of Ecclesiastes is not only is there perspective, but there is also a conclusion. As Solomon's experiences compound and unravel, he is unfulfilled and growing in discontentment. But through that, he also has a growing realization. After his exhaustive life pursuit of everything in every way, shape, and form that he could fill himself with, he offers up one final thought at the end of his writing, an epitaph of sorts, in chapter 12, verse 13. And this is what it says. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. Or, as the Amplified Bible puts it, when all has been heard, the end of the matter is fear God, worship him with awe-filled reverence, knowing that he is Almighty God, and keep his commandments, for this applies to every person. And what that speaks to is a need for connection to God and a relationship to him. After Solomon's extensive commitment to doing whatever made him feel good and whatever made him feel happy, the only thing that was the antidote for his deep soul longings and the paralyzing emptiness that he felt after experiencing all those things was God. After the pursuit of many illusions of life, God was his ultimate conclusion. And 3,000 years ago in Solomon's time, the suggested plan for life, which kind of looks similar to the things that we would want to do and pursue, wasn't exactly working out for him. And in our world today, we are presented with a whole range of things claiming to give people life. But as we saw from the top five regrets, people were left empty-handed. Our culture today says there is no truth, but then offers up the sloppiest suggestions for life that don't last, that don't go the distance to give us meaning, purpose, and belonging in the long run. But while there are many illusions of life, God is a worthy conclusion and one worthy of consideration. I know deep inside of us, something burns for more. Our souls cry out. And we're all at various stages and seasons of life. But the desire to make it meaningful and be connected and belong is undeniable. As a project manager, in my previous working life, I've learnt to assess the worst possible scenarios and risks, and then I build a plan around those risks to make sure that it doesn't derail the project. My biggest project that I've ever been given in my life is my life. And I do not want that project to derail. So to gain perspective and to ensure I end up with a successful project, I start with the end in mind. So the pieces of the project meet the preferred conclusion. So, back to my epitaph. After initially getting over the shock of that assignment that our professor had given us, I sat down and I thought on my life experiences, the success, the regrets, and I wrote an epitaph for this assignment. The words that I would love to sum up my life when I stand at the end and look back. So would you like to hear it? Good, okay. My family might need oxygen at this point. So I haven't shared this with anyone. I've only submitted it as an assignment. So this is the first time I've shared it with other people. So here it goes. I have read gravestones in my life for people I have known and some I have not. Today, you read mine. My life began and ended. All that is left is the flickering memories of those who loved me, some stories, and this stone. This is not a sufficient outcome for anyone's life. Life must extend beyond this. That is why I chose God, whose purpose and eternal life triumphs over all. My growing realization was that life in its fullest was loving God and loving others. That is what I lived for. That was what my life was for. That is what my story on earth and beyond eternity will be. What will your story be? I don't share that with a sense of despair or fear or to be a massive downer on tonight, but I share because that is the heart intent of my life and that life is so precious. 7 billion of us are on this blue ball called planet Earth, and we're hurtling around the universe, and most of the time we're more concerned about what we're going to have for dinner than the purpose of our life. Our busy Western lifestyle doesn't give much time to this thing to consider the big picture perspective because we're consumed about the here and now and what is happening next. But because of that, do we actually risk drifting into illusion, just like those people before us, rather than finding a sufficient conclusion that informs all of our days, all of our seasons, and all of our life? I want to finish with one final epitaph, and they are the words of Jesus that he spoke through his life while he walked this blue ball called earth. And his words were actually a recognition of his death and that they would actually be a divine invitation to all of us. And this is what he said. I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. I am the way, the truth, and the life. These were his words, Jesus' words for you and Jesus' words for me. And throughout his life, he continually invites people into full, abundant life that is not only for this life, but for eternity. And while these words are an invitation to life to take right now, it's also the offer of a conclusion that will ultimately give life. Why do I share all of this? Because this is the foundation that I live from. As I get the honour and privilege to serve with you and love you as an associate pastor here at GBC, this is my baseline. Jesus is my conclusion and my ultimate motivation for life. He is my big picture and he informs all the little pixels that make up that big picture, all of our days and all of our life. I cannot wait to walk this season out with you and really get to experience not only the pixels, but the bigger picture with all of you. So we're going to just take a moment to pause, to have space to reflect in silence and just let that soak in. And then Mark and the musicians will come up and continue with tonight's service.